This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and RadioForThePeople.com and is engineered by Audio Diner Studios. Our theme music is provided to us by our dear friend Gordon Bonham, whose music can be purchased through GordonBonham.com. Our graphics for this podcast are provided by Kathy Piercy Frying. The podcast is sponsored by Artisan Realtors and Silicon Prairie Ventures.
Welcome to episode 9, believe it or not, of Normal, What's That Like? Today our guest is going to be Craig Marks, who's a friend and been a friend for a long time, but now we have something else in common that we're going to talk about in a minute, which is we're both cancer survivors at this point. So, but before we get to that, I have to do my due diligence and thank our sponsors, which the sponsors of this are Silicon Prairie Ventures and Artisan Realtors. I also need to put a thank you out there to Kat Fran, who did our artwork, which if you're looking at the video, you can see, but if you're listening online, you won't be able to see. But thanks, Kat, for that. And also to Gordon Bonham for our intro and exit music. And Gordon's music is available at GordonBonham.com. So with that, let's get started. Craig Marks.
Hi.
Hi. Nice to see you. So we're just going to jump right into this. And before I talk about your diagnosis and stuff, tell me a little bit life what life was like for you before you got cancer.
Well, I consider myself a very active person, a very physical person, a very outdoorsy kind of guy, and with many interests and part-time jobs. And I just like to be physical and active, and you know, just whatever. So that's what I was. I mean, I have a family, I have a house, I have friends, and I try to stay busy every day and do things. I look forward to, you know, I don't know if I look really forward to cutting the grass, but I look for something to do, and being an usher at the Pacer games, or being a pretend casino dealer, or any of the other odd things I seem to find myself doing. I enjoy being active and having something to do. I am easily bored. I'm very easily bored. So that's kind of where I'm at, I guess.
So so you talked about part-time jobs. Before part-time jobs, what did you do before you started doing part-time jobs?
I taught at Franklin Central High School, which is a township school in Marion County, for 34 years. So I came out of college in 1980 and retired in 2014, and have been retired. It'll be 10 years next month. So,
did you do anything physical in college?
Well, yeah, I did. I played football at IU for 5 years, and then was a graduate assistant coach, and then that's how it led me to my job at Franklin Central as an assistant coach on the football and track team for several years. So yeah.
So you're very active.
I was the first strength coach at Franklin Central High School, I was the strength coach at Franklin Central High School, and then they actually created a position to pay me to be the strength coach at Franklin Central, which I appreciated. And so I did that for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, whatever it was, after they created the position. I took a lot of pride in sports and athletics and training. So it's something I really enjoyed, and it was more or less my life.
So as your life's rolling along, you're retired, you're working some part-time jobs, playing golf, doing fun stuff you like to do. And then what happened?
I noticed a spot, a lump on the inside of my, it's called the conjunctiva of your eye, which is right next to your tear duct on your right eye. So it's the inside corner of your right eye next to your nose. It looked kind of like a little growth or something. I considered it an infection at first, and tried eye drops and stuff like that to clear it up. And it never went away. And after a few weeks, I don't know, not many, I ended up going to MedCheck, and the attendant there said, there's something going on here. And she immediately referred me to an optometrist, who then said, you need to see a surgeon. And within the month, I was seeing Dr. Whitson at Whitson Vision at 86th and, I don't know, close to college, and then scheduling a surgery to remove whatever it was. And when that was very unsettling, I didn't really want anybody cutting next to my eye. Of course, it wasn't ever in my eye and still isn't, which is good. But so he got in there and said, I took a biopsy, but I'm sure it's benign. But we got to send it out and get it tested. And then, of course, it wasn't benign. It was melanoma. And he said, this is very unusual, and we need to refer you to a surgeon that does this kind of work. And there's two of them in the east of the Mississippi. One's in Philadelphia and one's in Memphis. And I said, well, I'll take Memphis because I can drive there. And that's when I got to meet Dr. Wilson, the optometrist, whatever he is, surgeon. what an amazing man he is. And so I've gone to Memphis at least a dozen times now, probably. He's actually performed two surgeries on me. Initially, he performed a surgery to what he thought was remove all the cancer. And I don't know if you know anything about margins, but you got to have clear margins. Otherwise, there's still cancer available to move through your system. And the report was that they got back. The margins weren't clear, but they were, there were some abnormal cells near the margin. And so, of course, I said, okay, well, whatever. You got to take what you get. And then that was in March or probably April of 2021. And then a year later, I felt a lump on my jaw, and they did some more scans. I mean, they were doing scans the whole time, and they were coming back clear. You had to, you have to have enough cancer to be detectable.
Right.
And I don't know what size of lesion or tumor that is, but I had undetectable cancer, which put me in the remission stage. And then I felt a lump on my jaw. And they said, well, certainly we have to look into that. And so it was cancer. And I had 35 lymph nodes taken out of my right jaw. And then a month later, I went down to Memphis because it had been detected in the same location, further back behind my eye to a certain degree. I mean, more to the side, but a little further back. And then it was also, well, in my initial surgery, he not only operated in the conjunctiva, but he took out my right tear duct. And so I'm under the assumption that attached to your tear duct is your lacrimal gland, which more or less takes which I never knew, takes the tears and puts them into your sinuses to get rid of them. And so then I found out that not only did I have cancer in the conjunctiva of my eye, in my tear duct, in my nasal lacrimal gland, but I also had it in part of my bone next to my sinuses. So they took out an inch or so of somehow of my, I don't like to use the word skull, but somewhere next to my nose, they took out somewhere around an inch of bone to get the cancer out of my bone. And so I had one surgeon operating on my jaw, but when I went down to Memphis, I unfortunately had a surgical team where Dr. Wilson removed the cancer next to my eye. His retired buddy came in. Oh, they had to rebuild my eyelids too. And that's why I have a partially closed eye, because they had to put a thread through my eyelids to somehow make them work or cover my eye. They had to pull my eyelids together, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to close my eye. And if I couldn't close my eye, it would dry out my cornea, which would be a terrible thing. So they had to make my eye look like this to make sure I could close my eye so I wouldn't ruin my cornea. But so Dr. Wilson's friend, retired friend, did the eyelid reconstruction. And then he had a doctor that came in, and who's a nasal nose guy, who somehow took out my lacrimal gland and sewed me back together. And after the surgery, I couldn't even tell I'd had surgery on my nose, except that my my right sinus was smaller. And it was like, how do you do that? I couldn't even tell he cut into my nose. But fortunately, it's not very fortunate what I have, but fortunately I don't have cancer in my sinuses, which would be very disappointing. And as far as I know, after those surgeries, then you have to, I'm sure they're very suspect that they still didn't get all the cancer from next to my eye. So I went through 30 radiation treatments, which ended in July of last year. So after I recovered from the surgeries, the second set of surgeries, I had radiation through, I think it was July 27th. And then in December, I think it was late November, I was touching my jaw. I feel another lump. And so I went in for another MRI or whatever it was, PET scan. Yes, there's something there. And so I got to see the surgeon at Community North again, Goldenberg, who is a wonderful man. And he went in and took out the other bump. And so what was the comment was, well, you know, it only takes one cancer cell to grow into another lesion or tumor. So, unfortunately, I guess he just missed one cell. Well, okay. And so I got another surgery the first week of December last year. Should I continue?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, so then, okay, Craig, I guess you're in remission again. Well, okay, I guess I'll believe you. They never said this, so I'm not sure, Craig, but it doesn't look really good what's going on here. And I kind of, they never said it, but I certainly felt it. And we need to start some immunotherapy. Well, I had immunotherapy a year and a half ago, and I had 3 months of it, and it didn't work. And so, well, we're not going to use that immunotherapy. We're going to try a different immunotherapy. And so I was supposed to have it every 3 weeks for 4 doses. And after the first double immunotherapy, I got such a terrible rash. They said, well, you need to be on prednisone now to get rid of the rash. And we can't give you any more immunotherapy until you get rid of the rash. And so it was delayed a week or two. And the rash receded, but never really went away. But they said, okay, you're good. We got you back on 10 milligrams of prednisone a day, so we can give you the next immunotherapy. And okay, good. We're back on track. And And then after the next immunotherapy, you know, I get blood tests every week or two. And, well, Craig, unfortunately, your thyroid has failed. Your hypothyroidism now, so you need to start taking a thyroid pill. And we're going to back you off that immunotherapy for just a bit. But it's no big deal because, well, you know, you can take a pill. Okay. I got my third one, maybe on a week or two delay there. Okay, Craig, well, dang it, your liver's not working right now anymore. Okay, well, we need to put you on a high dose of prednisone. I've been on prednisone the whole time. But we're going to put you on 100 milligrams a day, 50 in the morning and 50 in the afternoon, and then we're going to taper you down every 3 days to you get back down to 10. Okay, well, let me tell you, 100 milligrams of prednisone will light you up.
Yeah, I've been there, done that.
Yeah, and so, and then I think there's like residual effects, even though you're tapering, you're still just
wired.
Well, oh my, it does so many awful things to you, emotionally and physically that, Not that, you know, I'm still on it right now. I took 10 milligrams today and I'll take some this afternoon. But I actually have been asleep through the night for the last week. No, I haven't been asleep through the night, but I've actually been getting more sleep. I'll get 6 or 7 hours of sleep at night now for the last week. And before that, I would get 4 or 5 and I'd be up for 3 or 4 hours a night thinking about how hard my heart was beating or, just not being able to sleep. So then after they started tapering me or putting me on this prednisone, they then came back the next week and said, Craig, we're not going to do any more of those double immunotherapies because, I think it was obvious. I think they were trying to kill me. Not intentionally, but the drugs are that strong. And chemo is a terrible right. thing. I always, as a health teacher at Franklin Central High School, we would have our unit on cancer. I thought immunotherapy was, something.
Nicer.
It's a therapy, you know. It's got to be better than chemo because you see the people losing their hair and turning orange or whatever they do, or yellow. And I never saw that with immunotherapy, but the commercials, Yervoy and Optivo that you see on TV, and they go through the list of things that can happen to you. And unfortunately, I got to experience several of them, and they're all very disappointing. So they stopped the double immunotherapies, and so right now I'm in the middle of finding out whether or not they actually could have worked. And so I asked my my doctor, I said, so, you know, I didn't get through the entire treatment. Is it still possible this is going to work? Because I'm thinking, you don't go through the treatment, who knows? And she said, oh, it can still work. I said, well, I thank you for being positive. She said, so we're not doing a double anymore. We're going to do the single. We're going to take you off the most dangerous, most terrible side effect one and just put you on the one that kind of maintains you. And so that's scheduled for actually a week from today to start that. But this week I have 2 scans. One I took on Monday, the other one I take on Friday to determine whether or not I have cancer anywhere in my body. Or my brain, or my skull, and so if it's my opinion, if I do have cancer anywhere from these scans, it shows from these scans, then the double immunotherapies did not work, and there's no sense in continuing a single immunotherapy. So it's a very big week for me. It's a very big week, and I'll know. Probably Friday afternoon. So I've got to get the courage up to actually look at the scan. That's something I don't really look forward to right now. But I was hoping maybe the doctor might call me and talk to me about it, but we'll see. We'll see what calls I get, and otherwise I'll just wait till May 1st and find out what they have to say about my situation. So I don't know if anybody's ever been on my chart for a community hospital, but I can read it, but I'm not sure I understand it. And even if I did think I'd understand it, I still wouldn't understand it completely unless I was told by my doctor what it actually meant. So they're confusing. The results are always confusing to me. And it's best if I just wait and find out through what the doctor's telling me.
So how is that? I certainly understand. I've been through some of this myself. but how is that feel right now, the waiting? What is that like?
Well, I think I'm a pretty amazingly positive person. I don't tend to worry about stuff that I have no control over.
Right.
And I'm very good about that. I mean, of course, everyone has their weak moments where, you know, you say, oh, woe is me or something.
Right.
But you can't live your life like that. And you certainly can't sit around and stew or lament about your situation, because that's all you'd end up doing. And that's certainly not where I am.
Right.
I go somewhere, I do something, I have work to do, I have plans. I use them as a distraction, but it's not, I don't need that distraction per se, other than, you know, I just like to be active and do things. And so, you know, I'm very much looking forward to the working the Pacer game Friday and Sunday for the playoffs. I think it's going to be very exciting. You know, we're going to go to the track in May. I have casino parties that I'm going to work at the track in May. In the next month, I think I have half a dozen casino parties. I have at least that many Gainbridge Fieldhouse jobs, concerts, and the Fever play. And I'm going to usher for them this summer. And so I have my little odd jobs that I very much look forward to. And you can call them a distraction, but I call them fun, you know. I don't do them to distract myself. I do them because I want to do something, and I find them entertaining. So
just because I know we have a couple people from out of town that listen to this, when Craig talks about the track, you're talking about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500 and all the practice and qualifications leading up to that, correct?
Of course. Just a side note, I mean, if you're truly talking about me now, aren't you, Dan?
Yeah,
it's about,
yeah.
This show's right. About me, right?
It is.
Damn right. So let's go. So I worked at the track for 50 years I just couldn't take 12-hour days anymore. And I figured 50 years was a really nice number. and it was time to quit. And so those 12-hour days, I'll never do again. And there's things about the track that I will miss. I mostly race morning is so fantastic. But I bought tickets for the first time ever. And I'm looking forward to being there race morning, not working, although I really, really would work race morning if I could just work
that one day.
Yeah, just one day. If you want to call me in, you can get me there at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. That's fine. I can be miserable all afternoon. Being a zombie till 6 o'clock at night and then go home and wonder what happened again. It's a fantastic day and I love the track. So I'm not doing that now. And I had to more or less defend myself because I have a lot of friends at the track. And the last guy that called me, who was an area supervisor, said, so Craig, you forgot to sign up to work the track this year. And I said, no, Mr. Rice, I didn't forget. I retired. And so what's up? Well, I said, 50 years is enough. And he said, well, yeah, I can understand that. And I said, and I work in traffic on 16th Street, and I got one eye. And I said, I'm not that smart, but I'm smart enough to know you shouldn't work in traffic with one eye, because I've seen people get hurt out there. I've seen people get hit by cars. And I said, you know how stupid I'd feel if I'm laying in the middle of the street with one eye going, where the hell did he come from? So it was, I just took it as an opportunity to get out. Not that I really wanted an opportunity to get out. I was going to leave either way, but it was very defendable to me to say, you know, not that I didn't want to retire, but it was kind of obvious that I should retire. And I'm glad I did retire. And as I said, I can defend myself with years and my physical limitations. So I don't need to.
I'm just going to, something I probably should have mentioned at the beginning, but I'm going to mention now instead. The other thing that transpired is that the timing of Craig's cancer, he actually was diagnosed in 21 first, correct?
Into March, first April.
Right. Yeah. Right. But the most of the traumatic portion of your cancer has been in 23. I mean, the second and third surgeries, and that was
the radiation. Yeah,
and the radiation.
All that piled in right there.
Right. And yeah. So it happened at the same time.
Right.
That I was going through what I was going through. And so Craig and I have, you know, I like to say we're members of a club no one wants to belong to, but it's also been, I don't know if nice is the appropriate word, but it's been good to have somebody who's going through something similar, even though our cancers are very diverse and our treatments are very diverse. A lot of what you're going through physically because of the immunotherapy, in my case, chemotherapy, you know, we've gone through a lot of similar things, and also just the fatigue and lots of, you know, lots of that. So I guess I want to say I would never wish anyone to have this disease, but it's been somewhat helpful, I think, for me, and I don't know about Craig, but it's been helpful for me to have somebody to go through that with at the same time who's feeling something similar, because it is, I mean, it's not something you can talk to everybody about.
No. You had just finished in the late fall and early winter, you had finished the physical rehab cancer program at IUP Cancer Center. And invited me to sign up, which I don't know if I really had to sign up, but just come in because they provide the service for people that are cancer survivors to train with them. And so it was very helpful to me that you stayed with me for those 36 sessions, which I think I completed a week ago Monday, through the winter. I think you saw me at maybe my best at my high point with heavy doses of prednisone, thinking I was an Olympic lifter, to not even be able to raise my arm above my head after the double immunotherapies attacked my body, where my joints were so sore I couldn't move, and my muscles were so weak I hurt over my entire body. I still remember my lowest point was when I could do 3 pounds with my left arm, and I could only do my arm with my right arm, because that's the only thing I could do was lift my right arm like that, because as soon as you put a weight in it, it wouldn't move.
Yeah.
And so, not that I was really that weak, it was just the drugs and the treatment at that time had overwhelmed my muscles and my joints to the point where for 10 days, my wife had to dress me.
Right.
But I still went to workouts, you know, because once I got up, then I could start moving. And once I started moving, then I kind of warmed up. And instead of having to shuffle my feet, I could actually get to the point where I could take almost a whole stride. And then I could get in the car. And it would take me 2 minutes to get in the car, to pull my legs into the car. They hurt so bad. And then we'd go work out and then come home. And not that I ever felt very good after it was over, but at least we had something to do. And And I felt better about it because we'd get on the treadmill and she'd go, "How fast can you go today?" I said, "Well, I don't know, maybe 2 miles an hour." And, you know, when I was on my high dose of prednisone, I was going 4.5. I'm thinking I'm going to the Olympics. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, I have to pull my leg up on the treadmill and can't go above 2.5. I couldn't. She goes, "We're going to test on a mile today, see what your time is." I couldn't do a mile. I think I went 0.85 or 8.8 in 20 minutes, and I couldn't even finish. I couldn't even walk fast enough to make a mile in 20 minutes.
Well,
so it's been quite a roller coaster. Yeah. And I was glad you were there with me.
Well, I also enjoyed. It's about a 20 or 25 minute drive because it's downtown in traffic. I think part of the experience that I enjoyed was that our chance to talk on the way there and on the way back. And of course, on the treadmill, we talked a lot too.
Shared experiences, we're comparing our treatments and our feelings and our future plans. And so,
I guess kind of the last question I've got for you is that the name of this podcast is Normal, What's That Like? And so what I heard you talking about earlier was all the things you do, but what is normal? I mean, what's normal feel like for Craig Marks today?
Well, I don't sleep very well, but better. On prednisone, you want to eat 20 cheeseburgers every hour, which doesn't really fit very well with your diet. And so I would find myself eating all the time, all day. Not as much this last couple weeks because it's receded a bit.
Your dose went down, right?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I'm down to 15 milligrams a day instead of what it started out to be, 100. So I don't eat as much now. And of course, during the winter, you don't exercise as much. But I got to work out with you, which was very beneficial. At the times where I could, I would still go to my gym and get fit on the off days. I'd go on Tuesday and Thursday, or I'd go on the weekend and get in an hour workout. So I still would do that stuff. But in the summer, you have yard work and you have activities and you have the ability to get outside and walk and stuff. And so that's what I like to do instead of going to the gym. I don't go much to the gym in the summer because I'm so active outside. But what's normal like now? It's I'm afraid to travel to a certain extent. I don't like driving long distances. It exhausts me. That could be just part of being old. I'm not putting all this on the cancer. What I am saying is the experience ages you.
Right.
And,
oh yeah.
And
no
that
question.
That's the thing about the radiation, the surgeries, the immunotherapies, the chemo, whatever it is, it ages you. And so I've felt like I've aged many years in the last 3 years. My friend says, you know, one day you wake up and you're old. And unfortunately, I feel that's happened to me. But you keep fighting. And
try to play golf, do all those things.
It's one of the drawbacks of having only one eye is your depth perception is not there. And so trying to hit that little ball off the ground, oh my, it's very difficult. But I love golf, and I will continue to play golf. We own a house that's on an acre and a half property, and there's always something to do. It's almost a 100-year-old house. In 2030, it'll be 100 years old. So 6 years from now, it's 100 years old. And there's always a room you could paint or a repair you can make or something in the yard that you'd like to touch up. But the new normal is you get tired a lot easier. You wake up and look in the mirror. And you say, "What the hell?" and then you go about your day. And if you have to take a nap, which I never did before, actually. I mean, maybe once a month. I might find myself taking a nap two or three times a week. Because I don't sleep at night. You know, I always thought I was a very good sleeper, and I never needed a nap because I slept so well. I mean, I'd get 8 or 10 hours of sleep at night. You know, when you're retired, you don't have to get up, and all my jobs are in the evening, so I never had a morning job. So it's very nice. I mean, I'm like one of those 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock guys going to bed and getting up at 8, and that's 10 hours, and that's like, wow, this is really cool. But now when you go to bed at 10 and wake up at 12:30 and you stay up till 4, and then you watch the morning news, and then you go back to sleep for 2 hours, that's not quite the same. But as always, people adapt. You have to adapt. And if you have to take a nap that afternoon, that's fine. I unloaded 2 loads of mulch a couple days ago, and I thought I was going to be paralyzed. It hurt so bad. But then a few hours later, I'm like, here I am. And I want to be sore and tired. I don't want to be sore and tired from the drugs.
Right.
I want to be sore and tired from working out.
Right.
I mean, that's my favorite kind of tired. And so when I wake up in the morning, I'm saying, am I sore from the drugs, or am I sore from being so active yesterday? And then, you know, by noon, I'm saying, okay, then. It wasn't the drugs. It was I got enough work in yesterday that, you know, I'm trying to rebuild my muscle strength.
Right.
And just like you know, it just zaps you. You've lost all your strength and your conditioning, and it's like, my gosh, I feel like an old man. And the only way you're going to get over feeling like an old man is fight it and go out and move some mulch or cut the grass or, you know, build a fire or take some stumps out, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just I got to be active. I've got to do something. And I want to be a good sore and tired. I don't want to be a... So the new normal is you adjust when you become short of breath and your heart's pounding after mowing the grass for 10 minutes. Well, you can take a break if you want, but if I take a break or not, it doesn't make any difference, because if I come back, I'm still going to, my heart's going to still pound.
Right.
And I'm still going to be short of breath, and I just walk as slow as I can and just keep doing it, because that's what prednisone does to you. It makes you weak. It makes you sore. It makes your heart pound. It makes you feel like you can't take a deep breath. And I've adapted to that and just move on. You just finish it and move on. And you come in and sit down and drink a glass of water and say, well, I guess it didn't kill me, so I'm okay. And just go on to the next thing, or, you know, if you want to call it a day, call it a day. But I have a schedule. I have things I do. I've got 3 or 4 things. I got it on my schedule to get another load of mulch tomorrow after my blood test and mulch some flower beds. And I mean, there's things you do, and some of them are more strenuous than others. And you can't, the thing about it is you got to do something.
Right.
And so, I try to carry on my routine like always. And if I have to slow down, or I've called off work a couple of times, and my bosses know that I'm in this situation, and they're very understanding, and I appreciate it. But, you know, some of my worst times were feeling like I maybe shouldn't have gone to work because my heart's pounding. I'm so sore and tired. I don't think I'll be able to stand up or be an effective usher, or, you know, to help people like I should. But I say, my gosh, if I give up or quit, you know, I don't want to do that. So I may not have my best day, but at least I'm there. And I've never walked into the field house or a casino party and said, when I walked out, saying, I feel worse.
Right.
Because it always helps me feel better, because, you know, it helps you to get your mind off you're doing. And activity, physical activity, to me is very soothing. It helps me deal with, it just makes me feel better. So that's who I am.
So I do have one last question. Your family, how is this? have you?
Oh, boy. Well, Don has been very supportive, helpful. I believe that if, you know, you don't ignore it, but you certainly don't dwell on it.
Right.
You deal with it when you have to. You know, most days you don't have to deal with it.
Right.
It's like tomorrow morning, okay, a blood test tomorrow morning. You going with me? No, I don't know. You know, you have that conversation. The only thing you want to do is go get your blood test and forget about it.
Right.
Or go get your scan and forget about it because you as soon as it happens, you want to get it behind you because there's no reason to worry about it or think about it. You show up, you do it, you leave, and then you go back to your life.
Right.
But a lot of times, you know, you have to think about it. You have to wait for the scan results, or you have to wait for the blood test results, or you have to wait for the next doctor call or the next appointment. And so you put it on the calendar, and I don't try to think about the things until the day before and set my alarm and get up and go, and then immediately get it behind you. It's two different blood tests. You put it behind you and you move on. My children are very aware. You know, my family's very well. They're very supportive, but all they can say is, you know, we're praying for you. Right. We're hoping the best. You know, I appreciate their concern. What's on the, let me see your back of your elbow. Oh, okay. Yeah. Quit showing off.
Blood work.
They're all concerned. They're, you know, my friends, my family, they're all frustrated and disappointed and concerned. And I appreciate that, but I don't want to talk about it. Right. Per se, what are you going to talk about? Oh, woe is me. No, you don't talk about that stuff. And once you say, I wish you the best, what else do you say after that?
Right.
You might want to say, oh, how you feeling today? And I guess I appreciate when people say how you're feeling because every day is a new day.
Right.
You really don't know if you're going to have a good day or not. And if you might have to be fighting through something, your fatigue or your soreness or whatever it is. And, or in my case for several weeks, it was indigestion. Oh my gosh, prednisone and indigestion and plus prednisone and not sleeping. Oh, those are two very terrible things that stuff did to me. And so not only do you feel like you're sick, but you don't sleep. And so you're, it's very frustrating. Watch a lot of TV late at night, which I don't want to do, but I mean, that's a big deal. That's really changed my life a lot. I don't like that, but, so meals have changed because I was always snacking, all day and even at night. I can remember getting up, at midnight saying, well, maybe if I had a little something to eat, I'd feel better. And it normally didn't work out that way because it's just the urge to eat on that stuff is so crazy. So the family thing, the extended family obviously know where I am. But of course, being a health teacher, I think I'm more attuned to the situation I'm in. And my family and my extended family, you can look up this stuff on the internet,
right?
And which I wouldn't encourage anyone ever to do, because it's so left field, right field, unbelievable. The stories you can hear and the trauma people go through, and the what the outcomes or the predictions or whatever they've got going. It goes from don't worry about it to you're going to die next week and anywhere in between. And so after I read for a few weeks, trying to find more information about my specific cancer, I just said no more. They don't know my cancer. Right. They are giving generalities about people that have cancer, and this kind of pertains to me, but in no way does it actually pertain to me. And so I quit all that silliness. Yeah. And so it's like cancer is unique to every person. And you may or may not feel confident that you're going to make it. You may feel like you're not going to make it, but either way, doesn't make any difference how you feel. It's how you it's just how it, whatever happens is going to happen. It's life, you know. It's what's going to be will be, and you have no control over it.
Right.
So I have something else I'd like to say. The 16th of February, they approved a new FDA approved a new drug for my specific kind of cancer, and so if this was going to be my last hope, this immunotherapy, this very dramatic double dose of immunotherapy, and if it didn't work, it was over. And so on February, which was 2 months ago, the FDA approved a new drug called Entigvi, which is called TIL therapy. It's an acronym. I'm not sure what it stands for. And so obviously I was very interested in that, saying, well, you know, I have new hope. If this doesn't work, I have new hope. And so I press the doctors every time I go in. So where are we at on this TIL therapy? And initially they said, well, we don't know. We don't have it. Hopefully we'll get it. And I said, well, you know, can you describe it to me? And they said, well, they take your tumor, the melanoma, the cancer in your tumor, and somehow mix it with your immune system and make a formula where you get like 9 shots over so many weeks, where it makes your immune system recognize the drug, recognize the cancer, the exact cancer in your body. And so it will attack the exact cancer, the cancer in your body, because it knows what it is. Because that's the thing about immune therapy, right? Or your immune system doesn't realize it's a bad thing.
Right.
Cancer is a bad thing. And so this is supposed to alert it to it. And there's similar drugs that do things for different diseases,
right,
similar to that. And I can't tell you exactly what they are right now, but there's other drugs that do similar things. That's how they use your immune system to do that. So it's not really a new technique, but it's new to melanoma and lung cancer. For some reason, they link lung cancer and melanoma in this TIL therapy. So that's very exciting. So every week I'd say, so where are we at on this? We're on this TIL therapy, on this Entigvi. And we got nothing so far. Okay, so next week, what do you got? And she goes, well, MD Anderson is my cancer provider at Community North Hospital. And finally they said, well, our headquarters are in Houston, our national headquarters for MD Anderson are in Houston. And we now provide that therapy in Houston. And so I don't want to go to Houston, but I certainly find myself thinking that, well, maybe I'll be going to Houston. Hopefully these scans, you know, show I'm in remission. I don't have any tumors in my body or my head, and I can stay on the immunotherapy, but all hope is not lost.
Right.
And it's very reassuring that I will have another chance after this, and we'll have to see so how that plays out. So.
And you have a very good friend that lives in Texas, so if you had to go to Texas.
I have a friend in San Antonio, and I checked the distance. It's a, it's a 3-hour drive to Houston, and I'm not sure how long I'd have to stay in Houston, but it would entail a surgery to take out the tumor so they could use it to make the medicine to alert my immune system. So I would get another surgery. But obviously, as you know, Dan, you don't know when your cancer's coming back, if it ever will.
Right.
I don't know when mine's coming back, if it ever will. We both will have choices to make about our continued treatments.
Right.
And at some point you can say, I've had enough. Or at some point you can say, yeah, let's keep going. And I think I'm going to be the person that says, I'm okay. We can keep trying. I don't mind having my wife put on my socks in the morning.
She might mind.
What's wrong with that? So yeah. So you know, things happen, and you just keep going and try to stay positive, and there you go. That's what I do.
Well, Craig, thanks for sharing your story with us and your feelings and all that. And again, I hate to go back to business, but at the end of these things, I also have to wrap things up. But I do want to say I really appreciate your friendship and appreciate all that you're going through. And I'm one of those people who does like to know how you're feeling on a daily basis, kind of. But I appreciate you having this conversation with us. The idea, of course, is to help other people, because if they heard my story and couldn't relate to my story, maybe they hear your story and they can relate to your story, and it'll give them some comfort that they're not by themselves. You know, they may not have a friend like I have and you have that is going through something similar. So that's why we do this.
Well, I don't know if I'm stepping out of turn here, but I mean, if you would have someone, I think you've had made some contact with people that
right.
that appreciated your story and
right.
maybe wanted more
right.
Conversation or some
right.
relationship with you. If I can help somebody, I'd be more than willing to talk to them if they wanted to contact me. So
yeah, that's great. And we have. I mean, that's what this podcast is all about. And I am amazed at the feedback we get from the podcast, and I hope that someone does take you up on that offer. There are probably someone who's in an unfortunate circumstance, but at least you know they'd have somebody who could help them through that process. So I really appreciate you offering that, and again, that's why we do this. There's we don't get paid any money for this. In fact, we're spending time that we could be doing something else, but the idea is that we've gone through something unique and maybe we have the ability to help somebody understand what they might go through.
Well, you know, cancer is a very lonely journey, very lonely. And with your support and other support,
right.
your family, you know, some people don't have family.
Right.
Some people don't, are very not very close to people, and it gets very lonely.
Yep.
And fortunately, we have support groups.
Right.
We're very lucky, but a lot of people don't.
No, they don't. Well, Craig, again, thanks. Kevin, thanks for being here. And I, wrapping up again, I want to say thank you to Gordon Bonham for our music and to Kat Fran for the artwork. And with that, let's end episode 9 of Normal. What's that like?